On this edition, the Book of Love and Creation, a channeled text with Paul Selig. I'm Richard Brendan, and the conversation begins now. The Book of Love and Creation, a channeled text, is written by Paul Selig, and it invites us to live our truth by knowing who we are and what we are and step into the divine aspect of our being. In his breakthrough works of channeled literature, the first being I Am the Word and now this new one, The Book of Love and Creation, author and medium Paul Selig recorded an extraordinary program for personal and planetary evolution as humankind awakens to its own divine nature. I Am the Word and The Book of Love and Creation are energetic transmissions that works directly on its readers to bring them into alignment with the frequency of the Word, which Paul's guides call the energy of God in action. Paul was born in New York City and received his master's degree from Yale. He had a spiritual experience in 1987 that left him clairvoyant. As a way to gain a context for what he was beginning to experience, he studied a form of energy healing, working at Marianne Williamson's Manhattan Center for Living and in private practice. In the process, he began to hear for his clients, and much of Paul's work now is as a clairaudient, clairvoyant, channel, and empath. Paul has led channeled energy groups for many years. In 2009, he was invited to channel at the Esalen Institute's Superpowers Symposium, where he was filmed for the upcoming documentary film Authors of the Impossible. He's the subject of the short documentary film Paul and the Word, and is featured on the A&E Biography Channel series The Unexplained, which premiered in August 2012. His recent and upcoming workshops include the Kropalo Center in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, and the Esalen Institute in Big Sur, California. Also a noted playwright and educator, Paul serves on the faculty of NYU and directs the Masters of Fine Arts program and Creative Writing program at Goddard College. He lives in New York City, where he maintains a private practice as an intuitive and conducts frequent energy groups, and he joins us from his home in New York City. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
You have a fascinating story. In a couple of talks, you have shared about this experience you had on a roof that literally changed your life. Can you share that experience with our listeners and talk about how this ultimately allowed you to become a channel for what you call the Word?
Well, you know, it was a significant experience for me. I still don't fully know what happened. You know, I was about 25 years old. I was a year out of graduate school at Yale. I had a list of things I had to have achieved in my life that I thought would make me okay in the world. I got the whole list. My life wasn't okay by any stretch of the imagination. I started to clean up my act, and I began to look for something a little bit more. And a woman I knew told me there was this thing happening called the harmonic convergence, and that people were going to be waking up. And this was the summer of 87, and I wanted to be woken up. I don't think I knew what that meant, but I wanted it. And I went up to my roof that night, and I asked to be woken up. And I ended up having an experience, and it was an experience of energy. It was an experience of energy moving through, you know, my body from sort of what I would now say is my root chakra, the pit of my being, all the way up through the top of my head, and it left me sort of paralyzed and, you know, in this wonderful energy on the roof. And, you know, I had been raised something of an atheist, so I needed something tangible that I could know in a real way, and I got it. I still don't know if I didn't induce it. I don't know what happened. All I know is it was very real to me, and the fruits of it were that I ended up seeing little lights around people, and that was the beginning of my opening, I think, as a psychic. It may have begun before then, but it was a marker. And it was a marker for having physical manifestation attached to the experience, you know, that I work with, and that's how I work today.
Yeah. Well, as you said, you received a master's degree from Yale, and so coming from a world of academia, how did this gift make you feel initially? But more importantly, how did you handle it publicly?
I kept it quiet publicly. I mean, up to a point, I was fascinated. I mean, 87 was sort of, you know, the height of the New Age, and everybody sort of was wearing their crystals, and there was a lot of fashion around that stuff, and I never was very into any of that. But I had to support myself, and I was teaching college, and I like teaching college. I still do it. I run a graduate program as well. I enjoy that. It's a part of my life. But my own spiritual path was running concurrent with all of this. I ended up studying a form of energy healing in the early 90s to get a context of what I was beginning to experience and how I was beginning to open up. And that really opened me up even more. I began to open up as a clairsentient and as a clairaudient and, you know, later as a channel as a result of that work. So, you know, it's a funny thing. I can be sitting in a class and I can be, you know, watching my students and a light will go off over somebody's head and I'll know they had an idea. And I've learned to say, what were you thinking? You just had an idea. And I'll say, how did you know? I don't say, you know, I'm seeing you light up. I see the light in your aura. It's just a part of my daily life, and it informs everything that I do. But I've only gotten very public about this in the last couple of years because, you know, my guides began, you know, dictating whole books through me that are being published.
Yes, yes. And you're here to talk about the second book, The Book of Love and Creation, a channel text. Both books are channel texts. The first one, I Am the Word. Can you share a little bit about when that started to come to you, when your guide said it's time for a book?
Well, kind of that's what happened. I, you know, was working as a playwright, which is something that I've done, you know, on and off. It's what I studied in school. I was working on a show one day, and then I heard the next day that I wasn't working on it anymore, and I went to bed. I thought that's what you do when you lose a gig, you go to bed. And Victoria Nelson, who's a colleague of mine at Goddard College, you know, called me, and she had been following the channelings that I've been posting on my website for a few weeks. And she said, you know, I think this is a really good time for you to write a book on how you became a clairaudient. I think it's time to do a memoir. And I really didn't want to do it. And then my guides piped in and said, no, we have a book to write, and if you'll meet for 2 weeks, it will be done. And in that moment, I had nothing else to do. I just had my ego sort of leveled. I figured, why the hell not? Who cares anymore? And I made the appointment with her, you know, for 2 days later, which is what my guide said we should meet. And I sat down, and I put the CD recorder on, and I closed my eyes, and she was on the other end of the phone, and they dictated the first chapter of, it's called The First Conversation, of the book that is now I Am the Word. It took them 2.5 weeks of dictation. I think I took a couple of days off to go teach my classes. But other than that, every morning I was sitting down, closing my eyes, opening my mouth, and, you know, for an hour or two, there would be a straight dictation. The book itself is the unedited transcript of those sessions, that we didn't go back and fiddle. It's pretty much what came out. The only things that were taken out were occasionally Victoria would ask a question that was personal to her because she had, you know, the guides, and they would answer, but that wasn't appropriate for the text. But other than that, that's it.
The Book of Love and Creation really invites, I think, the reader with really a loving tone to step into the divine aspect of who we are and raise ourselves to live out our potential, because it seems like that message alone is sorely needed in this world where so many people are forgetting who they really are.
You know, that's their teaching. I mean, that's what they've been teaching through me for quite some time. And they'll often, when they do groups, they'll start off their teaching saying things like, you know, you are who you say you are. You know, what do you want to claim for yourself? You know, they say we're all radios, we're always in broadcast. What do we want to broadcast? That's our choice. I mean, we have this choice, and, you know, as I understand it from them, we've been told that we don't. You know, we've been told that we're not allowed to be in this level of demonstration of our true worth or our divine worth. And the Book of Love and Creation is, I think, in many ways a call to that and a teaching of how to practice that in your daily life.
What has been your experience with people and the reaction to the book? You've had a chance to really meet a lot of people around the country. You've been very busy with seminars and festivals and teachings and such.
Well, you know, it began with the first book, with I Am the Word, and that's been out for a couple of years. And the guide said when the book was being transmitted that the book itself was an energetic transmission that would work directly on the reader, and that people would feel the book, that the book would be experienced as much as read. They said the book operated on two levels, the words on the page, and then the energies that was encoded into it. And it's been really interesting. But if, you know, I go to Amazon and I look at the reviews, people are reviewing the book and saying, I'm reading the book and my crown chakra is spinning. I'm reading the book and the energy is coursing through my body. I'm reading the book and I'm seeing energy fields. So that's what the response has been. And, you know, there was literally no publicity to speak of for the first book, and it was the kind of book that people began passing around, you know, hand in hand. People would show up for these little book signings that I was doing, you know, with these dog-eared copies with all these Post-its on it, and, you know, they'd gotten it from a friend. So, yeah. You know, that's how that happened. And the Book of Love and Creation is the second book in this series. I mean, the teaching is, according to my guys, this is a three-part teaching.
Okay.
So it's continuing to be passed around that way.
Mm. People are just really hungry for what the guides have been speaking through you. And by the way, you're very clear about that in this book. I think you almost say, this isn't my book. I'm a channel for the guides sharing this message.
Yeah, it's true. You know, I mean, occasionally I'll do an interview and somebody will say, in your book you say, and I'll say, you know, I didn't say that. I mean, it came out of my mouth, but, you know, I'm really not the author. I'm the medium of the book. I used to say I'm the guy that sits in the chair. You know, now when I work and, you know, my guides teach through me, I'm up on my feet, which shocked me that that's happening. I thought I was going to be stuck to a chair for the rest of my life. But, you know, as I begin to work with their energy more, it's more integrated, it's more fluid. But, no, I don't claim authorship. In some ways, I'm just a student, and in some ways, I'm a very reluctant student. You know, I wasn't raised with this stuff. I question the teachings myself. I think when I gave the first book to Mitch Horowitz, who's my editor at Penguin, I said, listen, if it doesn't work, you should throw it across the room and not publish it. I don't know. This is what they gave me. And that's really how I've experienced it. The funny thing is my life has changed enormously as a result of the teachings. Other people's have as well, and I now trust it.
Yeah, that was another question I had concerning the process of writing it and how it differs from a traditionally written book, because the book is really broken down into three books. One is awareness, the second is alignment to love, and the third, frequency and creation. But I'm sensing it's organic. In other words, it unfolded that way.
I didn't know what was going to come out. I didn't know what the title was until they gave me the title. I didn't know what the chapter headings were going to be until they delivered the chapters. I think they said in their first channeling, which is, again, part of the book, that the book would be broken up into three parts.
Mm-hmm.
That much I knew.
Okay.
What those three parts would be, I really didn't know. I don't know anything because I have no plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's when I go and teach a workshop, I have no agenda. I literally show up and pray that I can hear. I close my eyes, I open my mouth, and something happens. The energy starts to fly. And, you know, it's very tangible when I work and people can feel it. The books are very much that way. They really were organic happenings. I think they were experiences that I was a part of that came with language that was, you know, recorded on a page and then unedited and sent to the publisher.
What I love about your story, Paul, is this amazing experience came to you as you were an adult. You didn't necessarily experience a lot of these amazing gifts as a child, as you often hear from avatars or gurus in India. But I think I've read somewhere where you also would say that many people could experience what you're experiencing if they open themselves up to it. Is that accurate?
It's a lot about permission. I did have some experiences when I was a kid. They were significant to me.
Mm-hmm.
I remember saying what I know. I was seeing energy. I didn't know what it was. I said to my mother, what are these things I'm seeing floating around the room? She said, oh, that's dust. So suddenly it was dust. I had a name for it. I dismissed it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as children, we're all, you know, sensitive to what else there might be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm that special.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the idea of permission is enormous. We think that we need it for some reason. Somebody had to show me that it was possible to do this. When I was first studying healing, I remember going to my first class, and I stood in this room, and there was this elderly woman who stood in front of us, and she said, everybody ask for one thing, you're going to get it, and the energy is going to come. And I was a bit like, well, yeah, right. And then I felt this begin to go through my body like nothing I'd ever experienced before. And in that moment, I realized that this was really possible. You know, this was possible. I was having an experience. My guides are able to impart that experience through other people. And I'm very grateful for that, because I'm really not interested in people, you know, giving me their authority. I think people need to have their own experience of frequency and higher consciousness in order to be able to trust it.
Mm-hmm.
If you can have that experience yourself, you can claim it, it can become part of your own knowing. You know, the days I think of deferring to a guru or a teacher, I think they're gone. I hope they're gone, because I think, you know, we all have wonderful things to teach each other, but it's not about, you know, giving one's authority to somebody else anymore. I think it's about having your own experience.
Because you're also a professor on faculty at a college, I'm wondering, a question I had was, what are some of the challenges for you as an empath and channel when you're also working in the real world?
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, the empathic stuff is interesting. I don't carry it a lot. It's funny, I was teaching the other day, and I was giving feedback to a very young writer about her work, and I was looking at her face, and I just, at a certain point, I realized that I needed to check in, and I just asked her at a higher level what she needed.
Mm-hmm.
And on a higher level, she just said to me, I need to be told it's going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when I told her that. She lit up, she was relieved, she went off. I mean, I can access this ability at any time of my life. I think we all can. I think we're always in communication on multiple levels. We just don't always know it. But when I'm going to teach, I'm going to teach. You know, I carry with me my energy system. It's who I am. My consciousness is how I understand things, so it informs everything. But what I'm not doing is taking on people's stuff. When I work as a psychic and a healer, I may do that simply in order to read it and to be able to support somebody in transforming.
Did you learn that early on, not to do that? I know a lot of healers who tend to do that, and it really does affect them.
Well, you know, nobody told me this stuff. It happened. You know, when I studied healing, I learned a technique, but I wasn't being given a lot of information. So I didn't know I was empathic until I, you know, would have a client, you know, showing up, and 5 minutes before I would be running to the bathroom and the person would show up with colitis, or my shoulder would go out and they'd show up with a bad shoulder. And I finally got to the point where I realized that I was being taught through this. So when I read for somebody now, if I take on their symptoms, or if you ask me what's going on with your sister,
yes,
and I tune into your sister and I feel what's going on your sister emotionally or physically, it's a way to be able to support them to verify the reading for you. But what I don't do is I don't carry it around.
Mm-hmm.
If I do, I'm doing something. I'm overinvesting in some way that I shouldn't be, and I'm trying to control it.
That was dramatically seen in one of the episodes on The Unexplained on the A&E Biography Channel. By the way, I believe you have those on your website at paulselig.com. People can watch, but especially the show about the woman who had the handicapped child.
Yeah, I think they actually took the episodes down. They rotate them through on
okay.
The Unexplained. So the previews are up there on the on my website and on biography.com. But yeah, I read for a woman. I didn't know anything about her. She came, and, you know, there was a crew here, and I tuned into her by name, which is often how I tune in.
Mm-hmm.
And I tuned into her. She was a lovely woman, and all I felt was fear, and which would make perfect sense because she's in a strange guy's apartment about to get a reading, you know, with a camera crew. So, and then she had said she had questions about her son.
Mm.
So I asked for the son's name, and I essentially became the son. I didn't know what was up with the son. The son, it turned out, had cerebral palsy. All I knew was that my fingers, you know, began to claw, and I began to rock back and forth in the chair uncontrollably.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happened. He had no barriers up to being read whatsoever, and in fact was very communicative, you know, energetically with me. And I didn't know until about 20 minutes into the reading what the problem was. I mean, he kept saying to her, you know, you can't hear me, you can't hear me.
Mm-hmm.
And she kept saying, I can't.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept thinking, why? I didn't realize the boy couldn't speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had actually never spoken to her, you know, in his 13 years. So this was the first time that there had been communication.
Mm-hmm.
When I hear, see, I tune into a lot of parents who have, you know, rough times with their kids. And,
yes,
you know, if I tune into a 13-year-old who says, you don't hear me, it can mean a lot of different things. It doesn't necessarily mean that they can't hear, but I went deaf, you know, during the reading,
mm-hmm.
and the the boy was deaf, and I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, the deafness came as a way for me, as part of my entering into that experience of his frequency. And it came for her to know that I was really hearing her son.
Yes.
And I think on that level, it can be very helpful and very important. But, you know, I don't carry it around all day.
Well, I'm almost in tears reliving me watching that episode. I was in tears at the end of it. With a lot of the hospice work that I've done, elderly people and dementia, a lot of people tend to insulate themselves, workers, aides in places like that, thinking, well, they can't communicate. And when I saw you do that, and you had no idea what her son was going through, it reminded me, I suppose what I knew intuitively, but I saw it play it out, that everybody is trying to speak, no matter what our situation, no matter what our handicap, no matter the degree of dementia of that 90-year-old laying in that bed. And all I could think about was that sacredness in all life that we need to tap into. And I would love to see you share that somehow with the healthcare community in this country.
I would be happy to. I mean, I like to go where I'm asked. You know,
yeah.
I'm not a medical intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I always say this. People say, you know, they call me and they say, you know, what's going on with such and such? And I said, listen, I don't have the vocabulary for that. Perhaps if I were to learn anatomy, I might have a vocabulary that would support this work.
Yeah.
I've been told I'm very accurate. But I'll often say, you know, this is what it feels like. I mean, tumors I can often feel in my own body when I tune into somebody else. But, you know, a tumor feels like, and a cyst feel identical to me,
mm-hmm.
you know, because what it is it's an obstruction in my own system that feels like a pebble, you know.
Right.
So, you know, chemo always feels the same. You know, people that are on heavy-duty medication, I can always feel that because I can taste it in my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So I have those abilities, but what I can't necessarily say is, you know, which vertebrae is being affected. I can tap my own back,
yeah.
Say it's right here, you know, this is where I'm feeling something. But I think the ability to feel empathically is something that we all have, and I think, you know, I mean, I think we do it naturally, we just
mm-hmm.
don't know that we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows what it's like to walk into a room where people have had a fight, and you can feel the energy in the air. You know what that's like. You're feeling frequency. All I do is I tune into somebody. I just literally, it's like stepping in.
Yes.
You know, and they give me the information. You know, they're only giving me what they want me to know.
Mm. You're listening to The Richard Brendon Show. It's a joy to have on today's program writer, teacher, and medium Paul Selig. His new channel book is out, The Book of Love and Creation, a channeled text. We will have much
wellness
more
is an active process of becoming more aware and making better choices that move you in the direction of a more successful life. Choices to eat well, move well, and think well enable your body to live well. When your spine is aligned properly, your brain and body are connected. Stillpoint Family Chiropractic is a family wellness center where we focus on your lifestyle and the impact it has on your spine, brain, and your life. Find us on Facebook at Stillpoint Family Chiropractic, or our phone number is 317-863-0365.
Goddess Mountain Naturals crafts quality salves and balms intended to aid in healing and rejuvenation of the skin and body through properties provided by nature. The various salves help to moisturize your skin, soothe itching caused by bug bites and poison ivy. These salves have been found to ease pain from sore muscles and tendons and aid in the healing of cuts and scrapes. These are remedies that have been used for thousands of years. For more information, you can visit www.goddessmountain.com. That's goddessmountain.com.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Richard Brendon. My guest today is Paul Selig. By the way, Paul's website, which you will absolutely want to visit, is paulselig.com. Writer, teacher, medium. We're talking about his book, The Book of Love and Creation. Paul, early on in the book, you write, "As you go about your day, we want you to begin to imagine that everything you encounter you have chosen. Every smile from every stranger, every piece of dirt on the street, every telephone call, every mailing in your mailbox, everything on the television, everybody's face at work, on your children's faces, everything is created by you." Now, can you talk a little bit about what is meant by the statement that we choose everything in our experience?
Well, I mean, probably what I should do is try to get it from them, and I don't know if this is the place to do it, but they may come through. Usually when somebody asks a question that I can't answer, they'll come in and respond to it.
Okay.
But what the guides say repeatedly when they teach is that everything in our experience we're in agreement with, individually and collectively. And if we didn't agree with it, it wouldn't be there. So very often they'll use the image of a handshake, and they'll say, everything you see around you, you're shaking hands with, which means you're agreeing with it, which essentially means that you are in accordance with the frequency of it. Now, if you don't want it, what you have to do is let go of it and stop shaking hands or stop agreeing with it, and then you'll create a new experience. But my guides say we're always in choice. I mean, it's one of the things they say. You know, people sometimes come to me and they say, what am I here for? And the guides will say, choose it. What do you want? You know, it really is about choice. I mean, the thing is, you know, we don't know that we really can have what we want. And I think, you know, the what we want question gets very confused because we live in a culture that tells us what we should want, which may have nothing whatsoever to do with our true needs.
So, go on. So would you say that if someone's asking the question, they probably already have the answer?
Well, their guides are saying yes and no, but they can know. But they can know, but they have to ask the right question. What do I want? They're saying, why do I want what I want? Why do I require what I need? So when you know what the answers are, you can claim them in truth. You can claim them in truth. If you're not in truth, you'll be creating an illusion. You will be creating an illusion. You make messes. Period. You know, I mean, that's kind of the stuff they talk about. And they say things like, you know, and the one thing that they've taught me, which has helped me enormously, is they talk to me about not making choices based in fear. They say this in the Book of Love and Creation, and they say, you know, when you make a choice in fear, you create more fear. And they say, look at any choice in your life that you've ever made because you were frightened, and you'll see that it created a trajectory of fear. And I found that to be true in my own life.
Mm-hmm.
So I've learned not to do that.
Well, it's made
a huge difference.
And share a little bit more from the book that was channeled through you about love and fear. Oftentimes that's so confused for people.
About love and fear?
Yeah, love and fear.
They're saying it's choice. How do you want to be? They're saying, how do you want to be? How do you want to vibrate? How do you want to vibrate? You always have a choice. You know, if you want to vibrate in fear, you can claim that. That becomes your experience. They're saying that becomes your experience. If you want to vibrate in love, choose it. It's not such a big deal. They're saying it's not such a big deal. It is always choice. It is always choice. How do you wish to live? How do you wish to live? How do you wish to be? How do you wish to be if you wish to claim love? If you wish to claim love, attune to love, you are a radio. You are a radio. You broadcast a frequency. What is your choice? They're saying, period. I mean, I should say to your listeners, you know, when I channel, I tend to whisper the words to myself as they come and repeat them. So that's what all the muttering is, but that's just how it comes through me.
Often in the book, there's a reference made to the Christed self or Christ awareness. Can you talk a little bit more about what is meant by this?
Well, their term of the Christed self, they talk about, you know, the Christ as the aspect of the Creator that can be realized in material form.
Mm-hmm.
That's their definition of the Christ, and they say it's in everybody, you know, and that it can't just be in you and not the guy next to you either. You know, they say again and again, you know, you cannot be the light and hold your brother in darkness. You can't do it. It's too convenient. It doesn't work. So the Christ, they say, is the aspect of the Creator that can be realized in material form. And pretty much they say, you know, once it's awakened, its desire is to be realized as you. So they talk about us realizing ourselves at this level of consciousness or vibration.
There's a quote taken from the first section, first book of this book. It says, as Source embodying in a physical body, you have to begin to realize that what you are capable of trumps any outside power that you could ever possibly contend with. I love that quote. And then I think about limiting beliefs that so many people have that seem to anchor their soul down. And I'm wondering, how do we move past those limiting beliefs?
Well, the answer that I get to this is responsibility. It's all about responsibility. You don't want to be responsible for your choices. If you want to choose limitation, you can. You've been told you cannot. You've been told you cannot transform things. Transform things or you choose not to. So you choose not to. You deny your worth. You deny your worth through that action, through that action. You are who you say you are. You are who you say you are, period, period.
Hmm.
So, I mean, I get it. But I think, you know, to me, it's an old spiritual principle. I mean, whatever you put before the Creator, you're making your God, you know, whatever that is. And, you know, that's up to us. I mean, you can call it idolatry, I suppose, if you want to go into that kind of language. But if I think that my job is the source of my security, I may be in big trouble one day. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If I think that, you know, my spouse is the source of the love that I'm to receive, I may be in big trouble when something happens. I think, you know, I think realizing source, you know, is a big piece of the teaching, you know, and that other things are conduits. But I think if we want to create limitations on what can happen, you know, I wasn't raised to believe that I could do the stuff I'm doing now.
Yes.
At all.
Right.
You know, the fact that I can is still kind of shocking to me. but I also take it for granted. I mean, I don't see it as that special. It's become part of how I operate in the world, and I'm fortunate to be able to support other people in opening up in a similar way. I mean, the guides do that when they teach. The books are doing that as well. But, you know, so many of us, I think, are opening up now. I think that this is a time when that's possible. And part of the opening, I think, has to do with what my guides say is sort of opening to wonder, opening to what may be possible. You know, you have to elasticize your own beliefs about what can be in order to receive it.
Mm.
If you think what you've gotten is what you're going to get what you've always gotten. And my guides talk about that as, you know, recreating your history. They say again and again, we are not our history, we think we are. Think we're our history, that's what we incur.
You heard from your guides early on, Paul, that there were to be three. Do you know what the third is going to be yet?
I have a suspicion, but I don't know.
Okay.
I think it's on incarnation, because that's what they've been teaching for the last year through me.
Uh-huh.
It's the teaching of incarnation, and it's about being this here and now in this experience on this plane.
Yes.
And their teachings are very, very powerful. It's a lot about worth. They're teaching a whole lot about worth, and they work with this claim, and they call it a claim, and they have people say, I know who I am, I know what I am, I know how I serve. And it actually is an energy activation. People often feel the frequency of it. They say it calls you into present time, and that present time is the only time that any of us can know anything and consequently be in our truth. You know, everything else, past and present, that's just projection.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I did have a session with you over the phone, and you gave that to me, and it helped tremendously, that mantra, if you will. So, and it isn't amazing that people still need to hear that message more and more these days with all the teachings.
But I also think people have been lied to about who they are. They think they're their job. They think they're their marriage. They think they're these things, and if those things fail them, who are they?
Yes.
You know, if we are, in fact, an aspect of the divine, if everybody is, that's the truth of who we are. Now, I would be lying if I said I walked around the street knowing that all the time, but I've had experiences of it that are phenomenal. And my guides are able to impart that experience, you know, in their workshops and I think through their books. But the knowing of this is what changes things. I mean, you know, my guides will teach, you know, they'll say in the books, you know, you walk around and you see everybody as an aspect of the Creator in form. Your life will change. But that's a conscious choice you make to do that, you know. We've been taught to be in judgment, you know. And when my guides say, you know, what we judge, we fear, it's really simple. So judgment and fear are operating hand in hand.
And we can often have a misplaced identity into who we are. It's what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, in that last segment, we were talking about how more and more people are opening up to these kinds of things, which I think is amazing and beautiful. And you're seeing the unfolding of this convergence of science and spirituality and the creative arts and gifts such as yours. My question is, how is the awakening on the planet that is taking place today, how is that impacting us as you see it, or as your guides see it?
Well, again, what they're saying is choice, choice, choice. You know, so let me see what they want to say about this.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying, again, who you are is who you say you are, individually and culturally, and as a civilization, as a people, as a species, how you honor this time, how you honor this time, and electricity. yourselves and lift yourselves to an awareness of your worth, to a new awareness of your worth. It's a collective action. It's a collective action. It's happening now. It is happening now. The rules have changed. The rules have changed. The paradigms have been broken. The paradigms have been broken that limit you. That limit you. If you want to adhere to them, you can try. If you want to adhere to them, you can try. But they will not work the way they did. But they will not work the way they did. People are moving upward. People are moving upward in their own recognition of their worth. In their own recognition of their worth, and the changes are happening. And the changes are happening in response to that. Correct. So that's what they say is happening. I mean, they talk about, you know, the word ascension is used sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think when they talk about ascension, they're talking about an ascension of consciousness, an ascension, you know, an ascension in vibration. And I think that that really is something that is happening. And what they say pretty much, you know, is, you know, you can hang on to what you've known. You know, I think there's an image in one of their channelings of, you know, sort of, you know, trying to hold on to your desk chair while you're being lifted in vibration. You're trying to hold on to yourself as you've known it. You know, it's not about any kind of rapture. It really is about, you know, not tethering yourself to what you've created in fear.
Yes.
In lower vibration. That's really what it's about.
So another question I have. When I had my session with you, and I think a lot of listeners have heard this from me at least once, but I had an experience with amnesia, and you had shared that I was lifted in my vibration, when I lost my memory. My question is now, how can we, people, raise our vibration?
Well, they're saying claim it. Claim your
choice
you
again.
Choose
okay.
To. Choose to. It's your choice. It's your choice. No one will do it for you. You have to know you can lift your own frequency. Lift your own frequency by the claim of truth. By the claim of truth. I know I am. I know who I am. I know what I am. I know how I serve. I have a right to lift my frequency. I have a right to lift my frequency.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying tell them less. You know, sometimes when I teach, my guides will walk me around, and they'll spin a radio dial in my hand, and they say, you know, what do you want to play? And a very simple way to raise your vibration, literally, is to imagine you've got a dial in your hand and turn the dial up, turn your frequency up. It's your frequency. You have a right to change it. Do you understand?
Yeah.
Now, if I want to be in my anger, I can be, and I incur what I get from my anger. It's my choice. Nobody's going to tell me I can't have my anger. If I want it, I can have it. If I want the fear, I can be in it. I can swim in the tank with it. If I want to change that, though, the tools really are accessible to us in order to do that. I think we've been told that we don't have these choices, and I think that's just not true.
In the third chapter of your book, a great deal is said about awareness of the senses. You write, "The senses are the gateway to your perception." Can you share a little bit about the importance of the senses in creating our world and our immediate surroundings?
I don't know if I can. Maybe they can.
Okay.
They're saying your senses are how you know yourself and your expression, through what you see, touch, taste, smell. It's how you experience your world. It's how you experience your world when you think that the physical world, is all that there is all that there is. You're operating in limitation. The senses are able to. The senses are able to connect you at higher levels, but you must align to the possibility of this. It's not so difficult, truly. To know something new. But to know something new means you must align to the possibility of it. In order to call it to you. If you want to know what somebody feels, without asking them, tune into them. Feel their frequency. What are the impressions you receive? The impressions will be received through your senses. Period. They're saying period. So, I mean, that's just about operating as a clairsentient.
Mm-hmm.
You know, clairsentience, which is what I do as an empath, is really clear feeling. Clairvoyance, which is clear sight, is when any of us, you know, gets an image in our mind that's accurate or is in psychic sight, if you will. I work mostly as a clairaudient, which means that I hear. But I was doing a reading for somebody earlier today, and, you know, there was a relative of theirs that came through who'd had a significant drug problem, and I felt the whole thing. It was pretty uncomfortable. You know, I mean, I could feel what they had ingested. And, you know, that I'm accessing through my own senses, but at a higher level. You know, I didn't have to touch any of the stuff in order to feel what it must be like.
Are there times when you're doing a session and you sense or hear something about somebody, but you don't feel that it's appropriate to share it with them?
Not really.
Okay.
I trust my guides to work as a buffer,
mm-hmm.
and I trust the fact that if something is presented to me, it's presented to me in a way that they can handle. Now, I don't scare people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes
mm-hmm.
people go to a reading and they say, oh, my God, is something bad going to be said to me? And I say, you know, it really doesn't happen. You know, I mean, if somebody comes to me and they want to know why they're not in a relationship or what happened in their last relationship that didn't work, my guides may tell them that may not be comfortable to their ego self.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also going to talk about what the behavior is or what the beliefs are that are precluding them
mm-hmm.
from getting what they say that they want. So essentially, it's not about fortune telling. It's much more about, you know, being in this amazing process of being alive and learning. So the guides are very much about teaching, even if that's the context. And but I've worked with people that are leaving the planet, you know, and and they don't tell the people that they're going to be miraculously cured, you know, but they talk a lot about the passage and being present for it and the people that they love and what's been learned. I mean, I don't. You know, I'm not going to lie. I can't do it. You know, I'm a bad liar. I don't do well with it. And the other thing is, my guides say, you know, that there's no such thing as a white lie. You know, there's no lie that's ever been said, they say, that wasn't born out of fear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I actually think that that's true. So I can't fake it. But, you know, I will occasionally I may get something and I'll ask the guides how to, you know, they'll give me the language to say it in.
Yes.
It will be appropriate. I have a friend who's a good psychic, but he's got no sensor.
Mm.
So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily want to go to him and get a reading.
Right.
He's really accurate, but I don't want to hear the way it comes out.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
And so some of that style, but it's just not how I work.
Okay. My guest today is Paul Selig. He's writer, teacher, medium. We're talking about his second book that is now out, The Book of Love and Creation, a channeled text. We'll have more right after this short break.
Richard Brendan, Bringing Love to Life, is underwritten in part by Natural Awakenings magazine. Each month, Natural Awakenings takes a practical look at the latest natural approaches to nutrition, fitness, creative expression, personal growth, and sustainable living. The magazine also covers the products and services that support a healthy lifestyle. Natural Awakenings magazine is a free publication and can be found at most healthy lifestyle outlets. Their website is awakenindy.com.
This WICR program is underwritten in part by Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. They carry organic produce and bulk body care products such as shampoo, lotion, soaps, and shower gel. Their kitchen serves soup, sandwiches, hot entrees, and carryout food. Plus, they have a juice bar. Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. Their website is georgetownmarket.com.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Richard Brendan. My guest today is Paul Selig. And by the way, Paul's website is paulselig.com. Paul's a writer, teacher. He's a medium. He's amazing. New book is out, The Book of Love and Creation, a channel text. I highly recommend that you pick up a copy. Also, go to his website. There's a lot of things you can read and also watch video clips of Paul in work on his website. Paul, you talk a lot about frequency. You've mentioned that a lot on today's program. Can you talk more about what this means and why that is so important, why it's so key?
Well, I mean, you know, frequency is vibration. Everything vibrates, oscillates at a different level. They're saying to tell you this, please. You know, I'm just thinking about this. Somebody sent me a YouTube clip yesterday all about sound and vibration. And I'm not a scientist. I've never actually read any of the new physics. I don't even know what a quark is. I really don't, and I should, but I don't. And somebody sent me this clip where they were explaining the word, which is the energy my guides work with, or the meaning of the word, which is essentially that the word is sound vibration,
mm-hmm.
you know, that transforms and lifts consciousness. I mean, essentially, I mean, I'm paraphrasing it, but I just kept thinking, my God, this is what my guides have been teaching, and I guess there is a science to this. You know, I'm not a scientist. I don't come from a religious background. So when they use these terms, I accept them as they are. But when they talk about frequency, I feel it. It's mm-hmm. a genuinely palpable experience of your own vibration. So I know that when I'm vibrating at a higher level, I can feel the frequency around me. It's electric. When the guides come through in a room and they fill the room up and they shift people in their frequency, what they're doing is they're shifting the auric field, they're shifting the body, they're shifting the level of experience that somebody's having to, they would say, to acclimate to a higher level.
Mm-hmm. You've talked about being an empath, being sensitive to other people's energy, and I'm wondering, can you talk a little bit more about how people like me and our listeners might access those abilities to help others?
Oh, the books talk about this a lot. The Book of Love and Creation
yes.
specifically has a whole process of acclimating to your own abilities as a clairsentient, and they talk about clairaudience and clairvoyance as well. The process that they talk about very, very simply has to do with sitting with somebody else and having an experience first of your own vibration, to sit in a chair, feel what you feel now, feel the energy around you,
mm-hmm.
feel what it feels like to be you and the energy around you, then mentally tune into somebody else. They don't have to be in the room. They can be, you can tune into your kid or your mother or the person next to you at work. Tune into them and then see what the gradations are, see what the different feelings are. I mean, my guides would say something like, you know, can you taste cigarette smoke? You know, do you feel like, you know, you want to go to sleep? I mean, is your stomach full now? I mean, it's pretty fascinating how quickly people can do this. I was doing a workshop at ESSEL in December.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a woman who'd never done this work before, and she was just happened to be at the workshop. And my guides were teaching people how to work empathically, and they were working with partners. And, you know, afterwards we all checked in, and she said, you know, I was working with my partner, and I felt something that wasn't supposed to be in his chest. It just stopped the energy flow. And the guy looked out at all of us, and he opened his shirt up, and he had a port in his chest. You know, he had a medical port in his chest, and that's what she was feeling.
Hmm.
You know, now she was feeling it in her own energy field, but it feels like your own body.
Yeah.
If my knee goes out, it's not my knee, it's your knee. You know, and I've learned to notice the difference. But I think the first thing that we have to do, if we want to develop these things, A, is know that we can, and then B, put it into practice.
I mentioned earlier about the episodes that you did on the TV show The Unexplained, which is on the A&E and Biography channel. Very powerful, both episodes that I've watched actually several times. And, you know, it's got to be rewarding to know that you've helped someone get in touch with an issue or find out a key piece of information, such as repressed memory, that helps them to heal. Can you share about this work you do as a healer and also a little bit more about the show in general?
Well, you know, I studied healing back in the early 90s as a way to get a context, and I was studying it at the height of the AIDS epidemic, and I had friends that were sick. I didn't know what to do. I was volunteering at a place called the Manhattan Center for Living, which Marianne Williamson had started, that was providing services for people with life-challenging illness. But I went into this work primarily, in some ways, for selfish reasons. I was a miserable guy. I needed my own work, and suddenly I found a way of working with frequency that was helping other people and opening me up at the same time. So I got into this thing in a strange way as a psychic or as a channel, I think, in through the back door. You know, I have friends that trained in this stuff, and in my case, I didn't know that I could do anything that I do until I was actually doing it, until it happened. And so in that way, it's always been real. There's real satisfaction in doing what I do, but I can't claim ownership of it. And it's a funny relationship that I have with this. I mean, you know, I'm the channel. Mm-hmm. I'm the radio that's broadcasting. Sometimes I say it's like being a water faucet, but I'm not the water. You know, I can't take credit for it. So when people love the books, I'm really happy that they love the books, but it's a lot different than when I used to write plays and slave over them and think, my God, I'm in that script. I'm in the books still because I'm a collaborative aspect of it. I question things that are being delivered. Mm. My memories are being used. My vocabularies are being used, but I can't claim authorship. And so in a funny way, it's kind of humbling because I'm there for it. But, you know, when you read these passages from the books, I go, my God, these are so wise. They came out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. You know, I still have that experience with my guide's work. And I guess maybe I always will. But I do think because my guides, recently somebody said, you know, who are you to the guides? And they said, you know, we are who you are becoming. And I loved that answer. And I feel sometimes like the more I do this work, perhaps the more I can become like them.
Paul Selig, it's been a joy to have you on today's program. I have been impressed with the work that you're doing, and I want to thank you for that. I want to thank you for the gift of this book, The Book of Love and Creation, a channel text. And again, your website is paulselig.com. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Thank you, Richard.
I'll have a closing thought, but first, here's a great song from a friend of this radio show, Carrie Newcomer. It's taken off her Everything Is Everywhere album.
I saw the ocean stretch like fabric, like fine silk out on the sea. A moving scarf of light and water, forever changing me. I heard singing in the evening, as the sky turned indigo. Each beating heart plays a different part in a hope that won't let go. And the veil of night keeps falling, but the God of love keeps calling, and our voices keep on rising like prayers of air and smoke.
These words are taken from the very last page of Paul's book. He writes, "We call to you each the emissaries of light. We call to you each those who serve the Christ. We call to you each the truth of your knowing come forth in fruition of the divine plan. We call to you each the miracle of your birth and of your awakening. We bring to you the angels, the servers, the teachers who would herald your awakening, and we remind you now that you are never, never, never without love. We gift you with this precious one in all of your love and beauty. We are with you now in energy. We are with you now in creation. And we say to you this, I am Word." It's a beautiful book. And before we close the program, here are two excellent Dr. Mary Grace Pinella Wellness Minutes.
I love this quote by the Dalai Lama. "If every 8-year-old in the world is taught meditation, we will eliminate violence from the world within one generation." And have you seen the videos of the schools that have replaced attention with meditation? The purpose is to teach the students, from quite a young age, coping mechanisms to quell their own anger and frustration. The organization Holistic Life Foundation is at the heart of this movement, and they are breathing love into the communities they serve. They have an exceptional model. They teach the teachers. They are teaching students to be teachers of breathing meditation to their families and friends. Their stories are profound. Check out their TED Talk on YouTube. So why are we talking about kids and meditation? Because I've been a crusader for adults adding meditation to their lives to combat an all-time high stress levels in our world. And to not acknowledge the stress level your children are experiencing is just not acceptable. Empowering them to know they have within them the ability to control their experience is a priceless gift. For more information, check out our latest blog at drpinella.com. I watched an interesting video recently on social media. Famous surfer Sean Thompson, who lost his son tragically at 15 years of age, shares a deeply spiritual message of living outside himself. Just before he passed away, he wrote to his dad the phrase, "The light shine ahead." For Sean, this became his mantra through his grief. He found a way to live that phrase and now speaks worldwide on making positive change in your life. He speaks to the poorest and the poshest about choosing to live a positive life. For him, it is life-giving to help others to see the light that shines ahead. The quote from Mahatma Gandhi, "Be the change you want to see in the world," challenges all of us to be the change in our own little corner of the world. How many of us have the courage to be that change? It's hard to be the peace we know the world needs when the car in front of us just caused us to jam on our brakes. It's hard to be there for young kids when your own son was tragically taken from you. It's hard, but Sean's doing it. To see his inspiring video, go to Facebook/Jewish Food and search for it.
And that's today's program. Our website is richardbrendan.org, a reminder that all shows are podcast on that site. And so for engineer Aaron Duvall and production coordinator Angel Richardson, I'm Richard Brendan. We're bringing love to life, one broadcast at a time.